Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Channing Frye won a title with LeBron and is also taking his side in the GOAT debate. Frye said that Michael Jordan's only job was to score and, in his opinion, LeBron is the better player all time. Oh, and he also said that guys today, you know, really wouldn't want to play with Michael Jordan. So, Shannon, does he have a point?
Well, Skip, I mean, maybe his job, his only job was to score, but he did that in a clip that we had never seen before, and I don't think we've seen since. Do I believe that Channing Frye was onto something? Yes, I sure do, because I don't believe that Michael Jordan had the responsibilities night in and night out that LeBron James has had to shoulder for the last 17 years. And it's really an unfair comparison because they're so different. Michael Jordan is so different than LeBron. LeBron is so different than what Michael. The better comparison would probably be Kobe and Michael and then Magic and LeBron, because both mainly run the team, Skip. Because if you remember, Skip, even Kobe years, Derek Fisher really was the point guard. Derek Fisher did, got everybody into the offense. But since we're debating this topic, I do believe that Michael Jordan's job was to score and play defense. And he did those things maybe as well as anybody ever, especially the combo. Now, the scoring aspect, Skip, we can say, Wilt, but that was a different era, and I'll give you that. In the 60s and early 70s, that was a different era than what Michael played in. But to play offense at that clip and to play defense at that clip, because he didn't shortchange you on either end of the court, is what made him unique. Because we saw guys that were great offensive players, but they couldn't play defense like that. Dennis Rodman and Scottie Pippen was hell of a defensive players, but they couldn't play offense like that. So, Skip, we maybe will never ever see another guy that can combine what Michael combined. Kobe was the closest that could score you 30 and D someone up. But I will agree with Channing Frye. Michael has never had the responsibility on a nightly basis to do what LeBron has to do for the last 17 years. And I get what Phil said. Well, if he, you know, we didn't ask him to do that. Of course not. Because you had Scottie Pippen and you had other guys, B.J. Armstrong or John Paxson, that was running the point. And so MJ could just focus on scoring. So I will agree with Channing Frye. Michael hasn't had the responsibility that LeBron has had to deal with over the last 17 years. Well, you know where I stand on the GOAT debate. So whether or not that makes LeBron better, that makes Jordan better because he was able to score more and play better defense, y'all can debate that. But I will agree with Channing Frye. LeBron has had more responsibility on a nightly basis for 17 years than Michael had.
You opened your remarks by saying Channing Frye was on to something. It sounded to me like he was just on something, because this is either the funniest quote of 2020 or the dumbest quote of 2020. Shannon, he had only one job, and that was to score? Are you kidding me? You sort of just swept under your little carpet up there in your palatial estate up in Bel Air the fact that, oh, yeah, he played defense. He played defense. No, he was a defensive player of the year. He made first-team all-defense 9 times, barely. You sort of snuck it in. Like, mention. Shannon, 9 times first-team all-defense. When they needed a big defensive stop or quarter or play, he made it. And I told you earlier in the show, in 88, he averaged 8 assists a game. It's hard to average 8 assists if you're a non-passer. He wasn't a gunner. He wasn't a no-conscience ball hog shooter. I told you, Phil kept telling me if he wanted to, if they needed him to, he could average 10 assists easily, which is what LeBron's averaging finally this year. He could do that if he needed it to be done.
You're making Channing Frye's point because he was not asked. He didn't need to do that. LeBron needs to do that in order to help his team win. But you're making Channing Frye's point.
But Shannon, it wasn't his only job. If that was his only job, he would have averaged zero assists. He averaged six for his career. He could really keep everybody involved. We saw what he did getting Paxson the ball late against the Lakers, getting Kerr the ball against the Jazz in 97 late, setting them up, telling Steve Kerr in the huddle, yes, I'm coming to you, and Kerr yelling back, I'll be ready. And he hit him right in stride. He split the double team and hit him right in stride for as he approached the free throw line. He went right up into his motion. It was a beautiful pass, capped off by a beautiful shot by a little guy who was just a spare part, who wasn't even recruited out of high school. Jordan won championships with little Steve Kerr. So don't tell me he had only one job. He was the leader and the motivator of that whole basketball team. He led in ways I don't believe LeBron is capable of leading. He was the guts, the soul of the whole basketball team. Yeah, he won 10 scoring titles, but he was a defensive demon unlike any I have ever seen. So offense, defense, to your point, nobody's ever played greater offense along with greater defense than Michael Jeffrey Jordan. So Channing, one job? No, he had about seven jobs, and he did them all at GOAT levels.
Oh, you know what, Skip? I was just thinking. I remember LeBron James split the double team, split a triple team, kicked the ball to Cal Corbin for a three, and you said that was a terrible play. Michael Jordan split the double team pass to Steve
Kerr. Missed.
You know why?
Kyle missed.
But Skip.
Yeah.
Skip, you don't run plays, Skip. I can assure you, when you diagram a play, you don't diagram that play as like if you miss it. You diagram the best play possible, and you live with the results. That's what Tom Brady does. He calls a play. He's like, man, if Edelman dropped this pass or if Gronk dropped this pass, you can't call plays. You can't diagramming plays, thinking about what might not happen. So you make the best possible play, and you live with the results. Skip, all Channing Frye is trying to say is that the responsibility that LeBron James has on a nightly basis for the last 17 years, that was never on Michael Jordan's plate for that extensive of a time. Were there games, Skip, because I think there was a stretch, Skip, he had like 7, 8, maybe even 9 triple-doubles where he was asked and he had to do that. But I'm saying on a nightly basis, night in and night out, year in and year out, for 17 years, nobody has had, well, first of all, nobody's played at the level that LeBron is playing at for this length of time and to have had that responsibility. So I believe that's what Channing Frye is getting at. Michael wasn't asked to rebound the ball, to assist the ball like LeBron, while LeBron still averages 27, Jordan averaged 30. So if you look at the assist and rebounds total, they're substantially lower. And you're like, well, Jordan averaged 6 rebounds and 6 assists. But you do that. So LeBron is averaging an assist and a half or 2 rebounds per game, 82 games for 17 years. After a while, that adds up, and you see just how the discrepancy is between LeBron and Mike as far as rebounding and assisting the basketball. I believe that was the point that Channing Frye is trying to make, and it's a very compelling argument, and I happen to agree with it because that's the argument I've been making.
Yeah, well, then you're as wrong as Channing Frye. And by the way, Shannon Sharp, what do you always tell me when relatives or close friends speak out for a star against another star?
Yeah.
What conclusion do you leap to that they're hearing it from the star himself? I believe Channing Frye was simply repeating what LeBron James has told him. Jordan just had one job. Yeah, that came straight from the you-know-who's mouth and not the goat's mouth, horse's mouth. Or in this case, the horse's you-know-what. No, he was...
Did he lie?
No, he's just flat-out wrong. No, yes, he lied because this cinched the fact for Channing Frye that LeBron will do his podcast, what, once every 2 or 3 months? So, Channing, way to go. No. Your podcast is saved. It's okay because LeBron's going to be on your podcast from here on out.
Oh, stop
you
it.
You earned your points with LeBron. You did what you were sent to do. You accomplished your mission.
This is what I don't understand. Is that when somebody heaped praise on Michael, you see? That's Charles Barkley. Heard what he said. Or Magic Johnson or Larry Bird or whomever the player may be. Oh, you see what he said? That's an all-time great. But if anybody, anybody says anything positive about LeBron James, that's LeBron James. LeBron James told him to say that. So why can't someone have an opinion about LeBron and it be positive? Must all opinions, and that's what we've seen mainly since this documentary come out, is that all the opinions about LeBron has been negative. All the opinions about Michael has been positive. And I get it. It's his documentary, and that's what normally happens, Skip. Movie comes out, you people say positive things about people. I got no problem with that. But this notion that all of a sudden, that now we're seeing this documentary, it's made LeBron James a worse player. How? LeBron James is still averaging 25, 10, and 8.
It has opened the eyes of even the blind witnesses out there, the billions of blind witnesses, the LeBron lovers. They're seeing, oh my God, he was that, and he was that. We didn't get that he was really that. And I think even deep down, every LeBron lover now knows what the truth is. The truth is, LeBron wasn't in this man's league. And in the end, Channing Frye even had to reach for that guys today would not want to play with Michael Jordan. Baloney. Maybe you, Channing Frye, wouldn't want to play with him because Channing Frye? Wait a second. Channing Frye was a soft 7-footer who only shot threes. He averaged 4.5 rebounds a game at 7 feet for his career. He was soft. Yeah, he might not have lasted with Michael Jordan. Michael would have torn him up. And maybe he would have toughened him up, or maybe Channing Frye would have run out the back door crying, somebody get my mommy. In the end, that's exactly the kind of guy Jordan didn't want on his team. So I'll give Channing that. He wouldn't have made it with Michael Jordan, for sure.
Skip, I think the thing is now is that, you know, having covered the game, the things that coaches do, you know, Skip, coaches used to grab the face mask and grab the guy in the collar and do all things like that. That wouldn't fly in today's game. And I don't believe Michael Jordan, and you saw it in the early 2000s, Skip, when he tried to take that style to Washington. Skip, they resented Michael Jordan. Just go ask those guys. They resented Michael Jordan. That style would not work, Skip. It is hard because you got so many guys. The difference is between then and now, Skip, everybody, the eighth guy on the roster is trying to build a brand. When Michael Jordan played, he was the only guy on the team trying to build a brand. Now everybody's trying to build a brand. Everybody has a podcast. Everybody's trying to get a clothing line. Everybody's trying to do a sneaker deal or some kind of deal, Skip. And then with the Bulls, that was Michael Jordan's lane. Nobody else was even on the road. Skip, it's kind of like we've been quarantined here for the last 2 months. The 405, I could do the centipede for like 6 miles on the 405 and wouldn't even see a car because that was Michael Jordan's lane. True. Now, everybody, Skip, got a brand or think they have a brand.
Mm-hmm. Shannon, in the end, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. Channing Frye is so out of bounds. And I will give you this, that today's NBA is rampantly softer than it was in Jordan's era. Maybe he would have sent a lot of these players into mutiny or revolt today because we got too many wussies playing pro basketball. That's the truth.
Oh, my goodness.
And Channing Frye knows it. Well, it's just the truth. I'm sorry. But you saw the force of nature that he was. You saw how he molded that team into tough mindset that worked through the postseason. All those Scotty Burrells and Stevie Kerrs, they all made little plays for him down the stretch in 1998 because of the way he mentally toughened them during practice. I'm sorry, it would work today if you put the right guys with him. If you put a Pat Bev, if you put a PJ Tucker with him, maybe even a Trevor Reese. I know he's later in his career, but those are the kind of mindsets that would work around Jordan and they would terrorize pro basketball today. No mercy.
the Indiana Pacers took Michael Jordan and the Bulls all the way to seven games in the 1998 Eastern Conference Finals. Steve Kerr said that Game 7 was, quote, the scariest game we ever faced. And then he shared this story that he and teammate Judd Bushler were so nervous driving to that game that they didn't talk for the first 15 minutes of the ride. So, Shannon, how big of a threat were Reggie Miller and those Pacers to Jordan's Bulls?
Skip, I don't really think they were a serious threat, Skip. I think the thing is that the pressure started getting to the Bulls and realizing the enormity of what they were going for to try to get to their second of their three-peats. They needed to get past the Game 7. And they had, I think, the Skip, wasn't this the only the second Game 7 they had ever had to endure in that run? And so, Skip, when I look at it, the difference between the Pacers and the Bulls had a bomb that can detonate at any time and go get you 40, 50. And the Pacers relied on balanced scoring. In order to beat the Bulls in that run, Skip, you had to have a guy that could detonate. And they didn't have that. Reggie only scored 20 points in that series twice. He averaged about 17. Rick Smith was about 16 a game. Skip, they prided themselves on toughness. They had a big, big, big team. Rick Smith, the Davis boys. And so that's what they tried to do, Skip. Mm-hmm. They tried to out-tough you because they tried to take a page out of what the Knicks had done, Skip, when they had Patrick and they had Oak, they had Charles Smith, Xavier McDaniel, Mason. So that's what the Pacers tried to do. Skip, you remember Larry Bird was the head coach. And that was a style. They were a physical team. People don't realize not only were the Celtics talented and big, but they were physical. That's why the Pistons really didn't have any they didn't have a problem with the Pistons early on, Skip. And then they started breaking down. They started getting old. Going to finals and going to Eastern Conference championships every year starts to take its toll. But, Skip, I don't – maybe because I was on the outside looking in, but I didn't really – there was no doubt in my mind that the Bulls were going to win this Game 7. And because I really never felt, Skip, that they were going to win this game in Chicago. Maybe not. If it had been in Indy, Skip, okay. You could have convinced me Indy had a realistic chance. And I thought early on they had an opportunity to steal some games in Chicago – and they let them slip. And so that was their opportunity. They had to get one of those games, Skip, and then close it out on their home floor. Because if they were ever going, they were not going to beat, Michael Jordan was not going to let that happen, was not going to let Reggie Miller and those Pacers beat them in a Game 7 in Chicago. So, Skip, for me, I never sensed that they were going to lose this Game 7 to the Pacers because I didn't think Pacers had enough scoring. And they could only get scoring from one place, and that was Reggie.
For once, we're going to agree on something, but for different reasons. So as I've told you, I was there in Chicago as the columnist for the Tribune, and I covered all seven of those games home and away. And let me tell you, they were knockdown dragouts. You're right. Those Pacers were the bad boy Pistons all over again in the later 90s instead of the late 80s. Mm-hmm. And that Pacers team, Reggie Miller said, was better than the Bulls. I'll give Reggie that. Top to bottom, the Pacers were better.
Yeah.
They were deep. They were tough. They were physical. They were sly and smart. And they were beautifully coached by Larry Bird in his first year as an NBA coach, named Coach of the Year. But to your point, Shannon, Larry couldn't play. If he could have played, I believe the Pacers would have won the series. But Larry could only sit and watch and try to maneuver his chess pieces against Jordan. And even though the Game 7 score was way down low, it was 88-83. It was more football than basketball. But in the end, what did we see Ahmad Rashad say back in the Bulls' offices sitting with Jordan before Game 7? Do you remember this? As Ahmad Rashad was Jordan's best friend, hung with him before and after every game. Played pro football, as you know, was a very good receiver in pro football as Bobby Moore at that point.
At University of Oregon.
But Ahmad, at Oregon, Ahmad said to Jordan, as Jordan was trying to focus for the game, some can and some can't. And then he repeated it. Some can and some can't. Jordan said some can and some can't. He was talking about Reggie. Because in the end, in a Game 7, Reggie was going to have to rise up above Michael. And even though Reggie Correct. Said, I was the one, I was the only one, I wasn't afraid of him, I don't believe it, Reggie. Reggie told the story of when Reggie was a rookie, that he dared to trash talk and had a good first half against Jordan, who then shut him up in the second half. And then as they walked off the floor, he said, you don't trash talk Black Jesus. Remember that? It's a great line. You don't trash talk Black Jesus, said Michael to Reggie. I believe in Reggie's heart that he believed from that point on, I'm up against Black Jesus here, and I don't really believe I can beat Black Jesus. So, Shannon, what happened in the fourth quarter of Game 7, again, to your point, at the United Center in Chicago? Jordan and Reggie were both sent back in at the same time by their respective coaches with 7:39 to play. It was a nip-tuck mm-hmm. seesaw game. But from that mark on, Jordan guarded Reggie. And guess what? Mm-hmm. Reggie managed to get off one more shot, a three-point shot that missed badly. That was it for him for the last 7:39 of the game. Reggie down the stretch right. scored 0 points because Michael just said, no, you're not going to do it in my house. And in the end, the Pacers weren't going to win unless Reggie went off the way we saw him go off against Spike Lee's Knicks that time when he went ballistic Correct. Crazy at the end of that playoff. Remember that? And, right. and he's capable. Right. He was capable. He made a big shot on Michael at the end of game four. Remember, he pushed off. It yeah. was like five times more egregious than Michael pushing off Brian Russell at the end of game six, making the last shot. But in this case, Reggie yes. got away with a big shove off and made the late three that won game four. So he was capable of doing it in game four. But when it comes to game seven, some can and some can't. In the end, Reggie yes. could not. So that was the difference in that series. That was very, it was extremely competitive. And a lot of the national media were there because they thought it was going to be the end of Michael Jordan. A lot of people believe that game seven would have been his last game, and you know the rest of the story.
Skip, do you ever think there'll be that a network will allow someone to get like Ahmad and Mike? Do you think a network would allow one of his on-air personalities to have that type of relationship with another player again?
Yeah, sure. If it gets them a post-game interview every time. Yeah. Well, listen, Michael would stop for Ahmad like before and after every game. Ahmad had the goods, man. He had everything.
He knew
everything. Now, there are some things, again, there's sacrifice that you have to make because some things he's going to protect. But Ahmad was really... I know Ahmad. He's a really good reporter. He would report up to the edge of the cliff everything that he could about Jordan. So I think it benefited Correct. NBC at the time with that contract to have Ahmad on their side.
Skip, I don't know. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Skip, I didn't write this down last night. They were on the sideline, and Phil said, we're going to switch. And Michael said, I'm not switching. You know what? I'm chasing everything. No. Somebody's like, well, we're going to switch. And Mike looked back over his shoulder like, shut up. We're not switching. He's like, I'm going everything. I'm fighting over every screen. I'm fighting through everything.
I'm fighting through every pick. I'm not switching nothing. No. Right.
Exactly.
I believe it was about Reggie. It was like, I'm going to take his you-know-what, and I'm going to take it out of the game. Right. Because remember how they would run Reggie off the back line, and they'd run him through eight picks? And Jordan says, no, I'm fighting through everyone, and I'm going to wind up in his face when he shoots his jumper. And he did. Right. He wouldn't even let him get his jump shot off down the stretch of game four.
And that was the thing, Skip. You got to realize they had 7-4 Rick Smith, and then you got to run past one Davis, and you got to run past the other Davis. And Reggie was doing what Ray Allen and Steph Curry and Rip Hamilton did. Reggie was doing that in the 80s. Reggie was doing that way before those guys even thought about picking up a basketball or getting on an NBA court. So he was continuous motion, and what they were trying to do, Skip, was trying to tire him out, taking those body blows. Okay, you take a forearm to the chest here, you take a hip to the hip there, and we're trying to tire him out. But for Jordan to sustain that kind of level of energy, Skip, You would not ask your best player to guard the opposing team's best player pick after pick after pick because, like you said, they're going to switch it. Okay, switch that. Mike says, I ain't switching Jack. I'm fighting over everything.
Nothing. And allow me to conclude this discussion by making one last point. There was a crucial jump ball in that game with the Pacers 77, up, 74. I believe, three, wanting to go up five with 6:39 left in the fourth quarter. And it's Jordan against Rick Smits, who was 7'4" tall versus Jordan 6'6". 6'6" versus 7'4". And Jordan won the tip. Now, I think he went up and sort of hammered into his arm a little bit and got away with one.
Yeah.
But that was Michael, and that was another play that doesn't show up in the box score. So Channing Frye, he did have other jobs besides scoring. Thank you.
And Skip, it went right to Steve Kerr, who already had his feet set, and he launched a three, and boom. It went from possibly being a five-point game to a tie ball game, and the Bulls never looked back, and we...
No mercy. All right, guys, Rick Bucher talked to several NBA personnel about how Michael Jordan would have fit in today's game. They all agreed he would still be considered the best in the game, and it was MJ's intangibles that would put him above everyone else. One Eastern Conference GM said, quote, there's nobody with his drive, nobody with his killer instinct, nobody close. And one NBA trainer said he'd imagine MJ would have been even quicker playing today. So Shannon, I want you to think about that for a second. How good would Jordan have been playing in today's NBA?
Well, he'd be great. I mean, I think generational players would be great in any era. But it's hard for me to imagine that. See, the problem that I have is that when people say only Jordan would have been great in today's game. What about Larry Bird? Larry Bird was 24-10-6 and shot less than 2 threes a game. With his ability to shoot the three, he was almost a 90% free throw shooter. Would he not been great? Dominique Wilkins, would he have not been great one-on-one with the floor spread? Remember, Skip, the 80s might have been the highest scoring decade, outside, I think the 60s, but the 80s were one of the highest scoring decades in NBA history. So only Jordan from that era would have been great. Man, stop this. Of course Jordan would have been great, but did they not have training back then, Skip? So Michael Jordan didn't know anything about training. He sure went to Tim Grover when he wanted to train to get ready for the Bulls. I mean, not for the Bulls, for the Pistons. So let me ask you a question. Okay, with the advent of training and nutrition, is Michael Jordan still going to have some of those habits that we saw in the documentary? Is he still going to be smoking cigars in his locker room before the game, Skip? Is he going to be smoking after the game? Is he still going to have those habits about going out gambling late at night and drinking? Are those still going to be a part of his repertoire? Oh, nobody mentioned that. All they want to say, well, he's going to train. But what about those other habits? Is anybody going to talk about that? Well, if we're going to talk, if we're going to talk all the way real, let's talk all the way real. So for me, yes, Jordan would be great now. But do I believe Jordan would be 15 more points better than Kobe's highest scoring game average of the season? No. Jordan is not scoring 50 points a night. Wilt did that. That's it. Nobody else is scoring 50.
Shannon Sharp, A, this is not about Larry Bird or Magic or whoever else you want to throw in to distract our audience. This is about how Jordan would do today. And by the way, my takeaway from Rick Bucher's excellent overall piece is that Jordan would terrorize and dominate today's NBA even more than he did his own era. Now, back to his bad habits. He had the same habits all the way back to the first three-peat, if you start in 91.
Okay, then.
But he also had workout habits that were unparalleled. I know because I know Tim Grover very well. Tim is great at what he does, and he was great at staying ahead of the curve. And in the end, he kept Michael supremely fit, even though he did smoke cigars. Did he drink more than LeBron drinks now? LeBron's a big wine connoisseur. Is wine all that different from hard liquor? Not to me. So in the end, they had what they called the Breakfast Club. They had it every morning at Michael's house. And Tim Grover's routine after every home game was to go into the locker room and catch Michael's glance, just to say, do you want to do 6 or 7 or 8? Meaning, what time do you want the Breakfast Club, depending on how the game had gone tonight? How much it took out of you, how much you think you needed to start earlier with your workout. Scottie Pippen, Ron Harper, and of course, Michael Jordan went at it hard every morning. He was in supreme physical shape. He would have been if we'd taken the 98 Michael Jordan at age 34 after years of having the same off the court habits, as you call them, and dropped him into today's NBA. I'm sorry, that quote that Jenny read is exactly right. There's nobody right now with his drive, nobody with his killer instinct, nobody close. That's the essence of what he was in 98. And Michael said last night that was his greatest year because he could beat you with his mind as well as his body. He had figured out the game from a cerebral standpoint as well as a physical standpoint. So now he was virtually invincible when he needed to be. So I'm sorry, if you dropped him in today, I believe Shaq would be right. He would average 45 a game. It's possible David Falk, his agent, would be right. He would average 50 a game, but with no hand checking, open floor, lots of run and shoot, and three-point shots emphasized. Remember, the most three-point shots in his biggest year of shooting threes that Michael ever averaged was 3.6 a game. It feels like James Harden takes 3.6 shots, three-point shots per possession. It's like he averages 20 a game. So if you had Michael averaging 10 or 12 threes a game, yeah, okay, you don't think Michael's average would go up because he could shoot it and he would have perfected
everybody works on it so hard today.
I'm sorry.
You see what you're doing? You see what you're doing? Everybody automatically assume, well, he's going to work on it and he's going to be able to shoot the three like Steph Curry. So why do we get to automatically assume? So what about LeBron? Like if LeBron had came, whoa, wait a minute. So what if LeBron had, if they had the emphasis on the three-point shot? When he got with LeBron, so proud of Steph Curry, because I think Steph got into the NBA, what, 2008, 2009, if I'm not mistaken, 2009. So let's just say the emphasis was placed on the three-point shot when LeBron had gotten to the NBA, and he perfected that. You see, everybody wants to give the benefit of the doubt to Jordan. Well, Jordan was a mid-range shooter. Now, his mid-range game was the best all time. No question about that. I'm not here to dispute that. But we can't automatically assume because, he worked so hard, he was going to be a great three-point shooter. Skip, why do we automatically assume everything? Okay, you said he worked out really hard. But, Rick, you can say if you had the training that they have now. So what's different? I'm confused.
Okay,
was he going to eat any different?
That was some trainer that said that.
Yeah, but
again, that was a shot at Tim Grover. Tim would have him in peak shape right now, whatever the new training method. Remember, Tim trained Kobe. Tim trained Dwayne Wade. He's trained a lot of the pro football players. I'm sorry, he would have Michael in peak quickness shape and overall supreme athletic shape.
And it's hard for me to believe, Skip, that Mike didn't have a personal chef all those years. So he was eating. I mean, he was eating as healthy. Obviously, Skip, we know more now. Guys, you know, everybody has a full-time chef. You don't have to be LeBron or Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, James Harden. Hell, the seventh and eighth guy have personal chefs. And guys are training more now, Skip, because the money is so great. If you'd be foolish to not play 15, 20 years, if at all possible. But Skip, back then, guys didn't take care of themselves like guys take care of themselves now. So, look, would Michael Jordan still be Michael Jordan? Skip, I believe Michael Jordan would still be Michael Jordan. But I do not believe he would average 45, 50 points a night. That's my only pushback. He would still be great.
By the way, why hasn't LeBron perfected the three-point shot all the way into 2020?
Oh, geez. This is not about LeBron. Stop bringing LeBron up. This is about the feet. You
made it. No mercy.
Well, NASCAR is back tomorrow night. It's Xfinity Series Racing with the Toyota 200 presented by Geico. Then Wednesday night, we finish up at Darlington with the Toyota 500 presented by Geico, live in primetime, only on FS1. And Sunday, we're back on Fox for the Coca-Cola 600 live from Charlotte. So good to have NASCAR back in the mix. Okay, guys, one game before Michael Jordan's infamous flu game, which we'll talk more about. He had to check himself out of game 4 of the 1997 NBA Finals due to severe cramps. The cramps stem from team trainers mixing up different types of Gatorade, accidentally giving him a different drink called Gatorload. Shannon, should Jordan have gotten the same criticism that LeBron got for cramping up in the finals?
It was a different time. It was a different era. Skip, you understand now that there's cameras everywhere, things that guys could get away with back in the 80s and 90s. Guys can't even dream of getting away with that. I've had Gatorade before, and it would, Skip, it would tear your stomach up if you ingest too much of it. Trust me, I know firsthand. I can attest to it. So if Michael Jordan ingested too much of this, whoo, cramps. Yeah, I'm surprised he even went back into the ball game without going to the locker room first, Jenny, if you know what I mean. Yes, that stuff will mess your stomach up if you ingest too much of it. But Skip, it just goes to show you there's a different set of rules. Michael could have. Michael, I believe, at the time he was playing, Skip, could have got away with anything, especially when it came to on the court, and nobody would have batted an eye. And because now is because it didn't get reported, anything that a superstar player does now, the first thing they go, Michael would have never come out the game. Michael would have never done that. Michael would have never said that. So everybody gets compared to Michael, not knowing that there were things that went on that Michael actually did that's very similar to things that superstar players are doing now. So I'm not going to criticize the guy. We didn't know about it then. We're only finding out it ex post facto. So let it lie.
I'm not going to let this lie because this is a big LOL for me. I'm sorry. I also tried Gatorload one time, and I agree with you, not to be trifled with, especially if you're going to go running after you try to ingest it. And I cannot believe that an assistant trainer got it in his head to go Gatorload over Gatorade. I have no idea. But the point was, we're talking about stomach cramps versus leg cramps, stomach versus leg. So now let's fast forward to game one of the 2014 finals in San Antonio, when somehow, some way, in the AT&T Center, the air conditioning went out in the second half. There were 18 right. players who played in that game, and only one cramped, leg cramps. That was your man, LeBron James, who struggled through the fourth quarter, dragging his leg, cramping, get me out. I can't drag my leg up the floor anymore. LeBron, what are you doing? You're up 6 early in the fourth quarter, but without LeBron down the stretch, he scored only 2 points in the fourth quarter. The Heat fell apart and lost by 15. So at that point in time, I knew one of the trainers for the Miami Heat, and he told me the next day that they were having some trouble with LeBron cramping under pressure. He told me it was more psychosomatic than actual physical cramping, that the stress sometimes made LeBron cramp. And if you don't think he did, you can look it up because I wrote it on ESPN.com. So that was completely different than a Gatorload stomach cramp. This is some kind of weird leg crampings. It was an epic fail on LeBron's part. And what happened the rest of the series? They lost by a record finals margin to my Spurs.
If you don't mind me asking, so you can't play with cramps, but you can play with food poisoning. Now, you stay up all night. You can't keep anything down. Jenny, you remember the story, Jenny? Oh, it's mythical proportions. He had the flu game. They named it the flu game. So you can play an entire game with food poisoning, throwing up, but you can't stay in the game because of Gatorade? Now I'm confused. But if you look at that photo, LeBron is the only one that have on leggings. he had the tights on. And I think that caused this skip because I've seen fight. I don't know if you remember this fight, but I remember a fight in which Klitschko, the trainer put too much Vaseline on him. But instead of just putting it on his face, he put it over his whole body. Well, your body can't perspire. So it locked it in. He overheated, got knocked out. So you live and you learn. If you notice the next game, LeBron James didn't have those leggings on. Skip, yeah, you could. If you want to beat him up, if you want to find something to nitpick about LeBron, have at it. But I do believe LeBron James cramped.
Well,
I don't believe, look, I had an issue with cramping. I've always had an issue with cramping. I was always lean. And I didn't like a whole lot of stuff on my stomach. And Greek, my athletic trainer, Steve Antonopoulos, and even when I went to Baltimore, Bill Tessendorf, would always try to get me to drink. But Skip, I couldn't drink because I didn't like stuff sloshing around in my stomach. So I drank the bare minimum. In practice, it could be 100 degrees. I wore long sleeves. I sipped maybe a half a cup of water for 2.5 hours at practice because I didn't want anything on my stomach. And I had a problem with cramping. I still do. But Skip, I'm not finna nitpick the guy. The guy locked up. It happened. It's not the first time that cramps have happened.
Shannon, with the Bulls, a number of Bulls had stomach cramps and had to go to the bench for a little while before they went back in the game, as did Jordan. But in this case, 18 other players are going in and out of the game in the second half, and apparently they all drank while they were sitting on the bench because the air conditioning broke, and it's summertime in San Antonio. It's going to be 100 degrees every day. You better drink or you're going to cramp because you're going to completely dehydrate and bad things are going to happen. So why LeBron was the one guy who didn't drink some kind of liquid, I don't know. But he was the only one in the whole game who cramped. It was a bad look, and it set a bad tone for a Heat team who collapsed against the Spurs, and that was, of course, the end of LeBron in Miami as he took his talents back to Cleveland.
Well, I think the thing is, Skip, like I said, he had the leggings on, and when you have on leggings, Skip, you have to be really careful working out and with extra layer. You know, they say wear an extra layer, but Skip, it needs to be cotton. That fabric needs to be able to breathe. And LeBron, you're asking LeBron, Skip, you remember in 84, I think that was game 7 when the Heat went out, the air went out in the Boston Garden, and they said it was like it was 97 degrees. But you have to understand, Skip, LeBron James is 265 pounds, and he's running up and down the field. Skip, that's why you see more times than not, you see receivers, running back, DBs cramp as opposed to offensive linemen. Skip, when you're exerting more, yeah, it's hot, it's 100 degrees for the offensive line. But when you're running like a receiver or a DB or running back, quarterbacks never cramp because they don't cramp because they're not exerting the same as other players. If you believe those players, everybody out there is exerting the same, no, it's not the case. And you know that's not the case. No mercy.